Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
It's a semiconductor nanocrystal, not an enzyme. This little talk I'll give, sort of a short one, about a particular enzyme which is sort of unusual, much more interesting than your natural enzyme, and then having looked at that and having saying, look, you're just going to invest too much information to try and look at it, how its structure in terms of looking at it in terms of the structure of organic bonding. And there's something else going on here. So I'll just give you a clue into it, and it's just sort of a realization. I don't think very many people agree with me, so sort of not a spoiler or alert, a spoiler alert for your own thing. If you're listening for this for authoritative people who really know about it, or don't listen. But if you're listening for it just to glean information and to get some sort of insight into it, go ahead and listen. So, look, enzymes are really, really important. Enzymes are basically proteins, organic mini machines, chemical factory machines, and they interact. They're molecules which interact in a particular way to take energy via one channel and reduce the energy for a chemical reaction. So they're sort of like a catalyst of a chemical reaction. They don't participate in it, but they're super, super, super designed for it. And it's enzymes have lots of very interesting things in that they have a range of temperature of operation, a range of concentration of operation. So your enzyme may take up oxygen, but when there's a lot of carbon dioxide in, it releases oxygen. That's your hemoglobin. So hemoglobin's sort of like your combination. It's the molecule and the heme molecule together make hemoglobin, a molecular enzyme. There's various ones. There's ones that absorb carbon dioxide. They just promote reactions. And what they do it intelligently because they're a machine which is actually switched on and off by conditions. So the release of oxygen is switched on by the excess of carbon dioxide. And the carbon dioxide is switched on, again by too much carbon dioxide. And it all operates sort of intelligently, that the intelligence is actually built into the chemistry of the actual enzymes. And so enzymes work in temperatures, and you may actually have a battery of three different enzymes which operate one after the other. So the enzyme produces, converts the initial stuff, the initial reactants into one first stage process, and then the next enzyme does the next bit, and it's like a little factory, these little warriors that work inside. And so enzymes are something that you really look at. So if you're looking at molecules, you can look at molecules and machines, but enzymes are the real real killer for doing things. Different from chemical messengers and hormones and things like insulin or caffeine and drugs, enzymes are just pretty fantastic little fellows. And albumin is the globular stuff in your plasma, and it's got a fantastic stuff in that it absorbs nitrogen, not nitrogen ions, sodium ions, and actually reduces the pressure of your blood into your tissues. It's sort of like go figure on that, and actually draws the sodium out of your tissues and makes. Sort of makes you less salty. You eat salt. You can imagine you eating all the salt. You turn into a salt crystal eventually. So this is a salt extractor. That's pretty interesting things to go across. So enzymes is something that you'd like to... And then there's the Rubico enzyme. There's enzymes which accumulate carbon dioxide to turbocharge photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is an enzyme process thing. So enzymes themselves, or the actual proteins, can be actually powered directly by light. Now, a lot of them are powered by ATP. That's denied something or other, triphosphate. I can't pronounce it. But it's all very interesting to do like this. And so as you're warming up your memory, like I'm trying to remember the entire periodic table, trying to remember all the amino acids and their functions and functional groups and stuff like that, and getting splattering of knowledge of different molecules around the place, and of course knowing the enzyme stories about what's going on. That's a very useful thing to get in your memory banks before you go out and face the kiddies. But nitroglycerin, something like that. It's something which blacks up molecular nitrogen in our atmosphere. So our atmosphere is, 80%, 79% nitrogen, 18% oxygen, the rest is argon, and, sometimes you can get a bit of a hit from water vapor. Just like one part in 1,000, or less, one part in 2,000, less is carbon dioxide. But that's all going into it. So nitrogen's out there. The great thing is it's got a lot of energy in nitrogen, but its energy means that it's really well bound. It's got three bonds in it, a nitrogen, three bonds, another nitrogen. And again, if I can exercise the small verse idea, if you expand a nitrogen molecule by a factor of a billion, it'll be roughly 28 centimeters between the centers, the nucleuses, but overall it'll be a nice sort of fairly soft, I suppose, one way, soft and springy. It's one of those things to get your mind around. So if you expand it by a billion, it'll be basically a foot across-ish, and it's really, really well bound. And so getting the nitrogen apart is really necessary, because we want to, in the backbone of all our proteins, it's nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon. Nitrogen's, right in there. So you've got to get those nitrogens by themselves, and you have to form a I forgot what the term is. The brain. You've got to do something to the carbon. You have to fix the it sounds so the carbon's broken. Fix it. No, it means fix it. But you have to fix it and actually stick it onto oxygen or ammonia or something like that. So it's not bonded to itself, and then the magic can happen. And it's got three bonds to it, and so carbon's got four, so that's a bit of a giveaway that if you add it in there, you can just do so much. It's sort of like it's got an extra charge compared to carbon, and an extra electron inside it, stored around it. It's a very interesting a molecule, sort of like half between oxygen and carbon. It's sort of like that mix, that ideal center. Sort of, it's not as flexible as carbon in terms of bonds, but when it does do it, it does. It's got a bit of electronegativity. It actually pulls the electrons, away, and can make rings with nitrogen. Really fascinating to see how it goes. So you really need the nitrogen fixed or broken apart. And to do that, there's traditional ways that you can do it. You can send a lightning bolt, and the lightning bolt breaks up the nitrogen gas and oxygen into different atoms, and when they're getting back together again, rather than stick oxygen to oxygen, it will stick an oxygen to nitrogen, nitrogen to oxygen, to break apart. So you get your nitrates from oxygen, and that sprinkles down. But of course, not content with that, various things produce fixed nitrates, and they're bacteria, basically bacteria, very primitive things in the soil, and like anything, like the entire of what advanced systems, that they outsource they outsource nitrogen fixation to bacterial nodules, which produce the they feed it energy and it feeds it fertilizer. Good tray. And so that's a lot of nitrogen fixing is done for the human race industrially. We actually get nitrogen and hydrogen together and make fertilizers to make our food. So most of the food that you eat, the nitrogen has been fixed by a industrial process. And so that's a great release of strain to the earth. The energy of the food we eat is really produced at a petrochemical plant, whereas the basic goodness of legumes and stuff like that, the nitrogen's fixed with these little bacteria. Now, these little bacteria will obviously use an enzyme to fix the nitrogen, break the triple bond, and actually make it into other things. And way that the term for this is a little enzyme called nitrogenase. There you go. It operates on nitrogen. So let's have a bit of a look at it. You walking along normally. There's a whole lot of pyrrole bonds, sort of carbon bonds, and there's a central atom in the inside. Come across this, and the enzyme's called FeMoCo for iron, molybdenum, and CO for something else. I don't know what it means. But you're looking along this, and you're going, oh, yeah, it's like nothing you've seen before. So most things have a central ion in the center. And this one's got, instead of its center, it's in its dual, sort of like its power, its dual is carbon, so that's enough. And then the outside are rings of iron and sulfur. Iron and sulfur to come across. Sorry for yawning, it's most rude of me, but I've just got to keep on going. But I'm getting plenty of rest, but as I'm doing more exercise, I'm getting really tired to move along. Okay. So this is like nothing you've seen before. Like, it really is nothing you've seen before. So there's 7 ions. What, not one, but 7 ions, 1 molybdenum, and 9-ish sulfurs. Yeah. What's going on? And then the bonding is something which is absolutely crazy. And, you know, think about it. What is going on? So the first sign of craziness is that the carbon is bound with 6 bonds. You know, so this is some sort of world record. What's going on here? How does that operate? So that's hard enough to see. And then the other bonds, which are drawn as chemical bonds, are all over the place. So let's walk you up through it. So I can say it now because I realize now it's, you don't think about the bonds, you think about other things. Starts off at on the ground floor, molybdenum, floor number 1. We're going up to, I'll catch up the floors. Floor going up, floor number 2 is sulfur, 3 sulfurs around there. Floor number 3 is ions, 3 ions, obviously the ions sit between the sulfurs going up. For number 3 is a bit more. It's a bit different here because there's a carbon in the center, but then 3 sulfurs around the outside of that. And then the floor number 1, 2, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let me go through. It's molybdenum, 3 sulfurs, 3 ions, molybdenum. 3 sulfurs, 3 ions. Okay, we're into floor number 4, which is 3 sulfurs with carbon stuck in the center. Floor number 5 is 3 ions, 3 sulfurs, and then finally an iron. So it's sort of like this skyscraper. And the bonding here is, you know, how do you actually look at it. The bonding is just incredible. You know, they have these bonds going in. It's sort of like on steroids. Bonds are coming in and out of the page, and they're cross-bonding, and then you've got the atom impossibly bonded. It's like they've just drawn six bonds on carbon. Where does that come from? So to go across, it's like it's striped. It's striped between iron, sulfur. So it goes molybdenum, sulfur, iron, sulfur, and iron on top. So there's seven irons, one molybdenum, and nine sulfurs at least going through. So it's this striped thing. Going across to it, I said, hang on, even though this is, you know, no one has actually said this, and you've heard it from me for the first time, that's a semiconductor. That there is a semiconductor. That's a quantum dot. That's a nanocrystal. That's what it is. It's an iron sulfur nanocrystal. Forget organic bonds. There's no organic bonds. What's there forever? It's an iron. It's iron, oxygen, iron. That's the, you don't call that organic bond. There might be a carbon in the center of it, but that's in a cage. That's got a band gap. I go, oh, let me think. Can iron, iron sulfur, that'll have a band gap. So, this is, iron sulfur is called galena, and, it grows in long crystals, very early on it was a semiconductor of choice. Iron sulfide, galena one, that has a band gap of around, it was iron sulfides, actually FeS2, this is close to FeS. So, you know, what is the band gap structure in there? But this entire thing, this entire beastie, is actually the, all life depends on us being able to fix oxygen, and it fixes oxygen. Albeit this nanocrystal is connected by the molybdenum to proteins and a sulfur protein on top of the sulfur. So really, although it's nine sulfurs, there's actually 10 sulfurs because it's a sulfonated amino acid on the top. So a bit of a head scratcher. And it operates as a nanocrystal. The enzyme, I'm sorry to tell you, you can do a lot of quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics are great for bends and powers with it. But this one has just got, well, it is a crystal. It's an ordinary rate. And this is the semiconductors have sheets of iron and sheets of sulfur with it. And this entire caging of something on the inside is a quantum dot. Now it's chemical. It's the entire thing is that from everything I've read so far, which is not a lot, I'm sure there's some things out there. There's some comparative articles between using vanadium and molybdenum at the bottom for nitrogenase, but this is actually a nanotechnology. Well, all cells are absolutely nanotechnology gone completely crazy. Like, we're beginning to do nanotechnology, but I mean, stand back, look at cells, they're most amazing, amazing things. So, I was trying to think of it, you know, I looked at it and I said, oh, look, this is an important thing because it's the seed for all life. So our modern civilization is built on factories which produce ammonia. Our early agrarian life was worked on husbandry of plants which produced ammonia or produced fix the nitrogens. So it's go back. The word we used to actually not know about nitrogen. We used to know about nitra, which is potassium nitrate, which is called nitra. And so nitrogen means the maker of nitrates. Yes. Okay, thanks. podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.